And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Greetings, welcome back to One True Pod, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. We are the Athletics Big 12 Podcast on the Andy Staples Show and Friends feed. Thanks, as always, for listening. My name is Jason Kersey. I'm joined today, as always, by my good friends Max Olson and Sam Kahn. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you? I'm ready for week two. We got a week full of games in. Now we got another weekend coming, so I'm ready to go. How are you guys? Max, how are you doing?
You know, I'm on my third cup of coffee, so I'm alive. I'm here. And you know what? We can finally drop the whole, like, sort of for now bit when we talk about the Big 12.
Hell yeah.
Big 12's going to keep on living, fellas. This what implosion? It's not happening.
This conference.
Big 12 forever.
This conference cannot die.
99 more years, man.
This conference cannot die. As we found that out in 2010-11, we're finding it out today. Everybody writes the Big 12's obituary and look at them now. So let's just start there, Max. What's the latest on Big 12 expansion? We're recording here on Thursday morning.
The Big 12 is going to go to 24 teams. It hasn't changed.
OU and Texas are staying, right? To be part of it.
OU and Texas have agreed to an extra 5 years. They're worried about the SEC. It's remarkable that how fast this has all moved. Honestly, it is. I looked this up. It's been 50 days. Since the Houston Chronicle report came out that Oklahoma and Texas were going to the SEC, okay, or at least were trying to go to the SEC. And you think about all the things that have occurred in that timeline, not just in the Big 12, but with the Alliance and, you know, all this chaos. It's really kind of amazing that, you know, last week the Big 12 gets together on Tuesday and Wednesday in Dallas, Bulls being the, you know, the eight ADs of the remaining schools, and figured out a plan, you know, and move forward with it just to invite or they're heading towards, you know, inviting BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston. And truly remarkable that they were able to sort of get the votes and get consensus on that so easily. Maybe it's because these were the targets in 2016, so they already kind of had the information on them. But we are heading towards wedding day here in the Big 12, I think most likely, you know, Friday morning here. And lots of questions to be answered about, you know, when they join the conference. Can it be 2023? Certainly unclear what Texas and Oklahoma are going to do. But Sam, congratulations. That degree hanging up on your wall is suddenly a lot more valuable, buddy.
Go Cougs, right? This is a long way today for Houston, obviously. But more than that, I think it's good for the Big 12 long term. Just to survive, and I don't know how much they're going to thrive, but I think once this thing settles in, this is not a bad conference. It's not a bad football conference. It's a pretty good basketball conference. And I think I am the most excited about the idea of four old Southwest Conference members being back together, Houston being back with some old conference mates, and you can play Baylor, you can play TCU, you can play Texas Tech. So from a University of Houston graduate standpoint, that's what I'm excited about for them. But also, I mean, I didn't want to see this league dissolve at all because I think it's a good league. It's a competitive league. There's some good teams. I mean, even outside of Texas and OU, we're talking about Iowa State ranked in the top 10 right now. Oklahoma State has been a consistent winner under Mike Gundy. I think there's a lot of good stuff to sell in this conference. And even though it may not be at the level of the SEC or the Big Ten, it is still a competitive conference, and I still think it deserves a seat at the table whenever we get to a college football playoff expansion.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's awesome to see the way that it's come together, Max. I agree. It's sort of unbelievable how quickly it's come together.
I mean, Sam, 10 days ago, if you'd asked us, we would have said Houston's not getting into the Big 12. Like it's just like sort of flipped overnight. It's unreal how you know, we kind of knew where this was heading a little bit, but like, man, last week, just everything just, you know, all kind of the pieces all fit together finally.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this last week, but once the Pac-12 said they're not expanding, that mm-hmm. pretty much shut the door, and it made it clear that the options were not plentiful for the other Big 12 schools, so they had to do something. I commend them for acting swiftly, and I'm curious to know, is this just the next step? Is this the last step? Is there something to come after this? You know, we'll see. Obviously, these things are so unpredictable, but... but for now, I think it's a good end result, and I think it provides some intrigue. And I'm most intrigued, again, going back to my Houston roots, is Texas and Houston going to share a conference at one point? In 2023, if they come in 2023, are Texas and OU still in there? And is Texas going to have to come to the University of Houston to play a football game? I can promise you, ever since the last time they played, and that's a long story for another day, they have no desire to come back to Houston for a football game.
I was going to ask if I'm going to get a trip to BYU at least once before.
Hey, it's a pretty trip. You know?
I know. I've heard great things.
Salt Lake City. It's, yeah. Yeah. I was there for a football game. I don't know if you guys remember. Texas played at BYU not too long ago.
Oh, Texas remembers.
Taysom Hill was the quarterback there. Yeah, it was.
Taysom Hill.
Was that the Manny Diaz game?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Manny Diaz remembers that game. I know he would like to forget it.
It's funny too, because this season we just had Houston, Texas Tech, and we're gonna have Baylor, BYU here in the middle of the year. So we're already gonna have some of these. We're gonna get a better look at. Do you think we should just start picking their games starting next
week?
Let's
do it.
The Houston, BYU, UCF, Cincinnati games. I mean, Cincinnati is gonna be freaking awesome to watch. We may as well, you know, roll them into the pot.
We can do that, but I also think, Max, you're only wanting to do that so you can catch up with me and Sam, because you're off to a pretty rough start. But
please tell the public how I'm doing in picks, Jason.
We can get into picks later, but yeah, Max was 1-5 last week against the spread. Against the spread, we do pick Good against God. The spread. You got plenty of time to catch up. And remember, last year I was awful, so I'm feeling pretty good right now about myself. But
well, after finishing my second cup of coffee, I thought about being 1-5, and I poured that third cup of coffee here. So we will try to do better today.
Well, great stuff. We'll keep an eye on all of that, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more to talk about on that front next week. But I actually,
Jason, what do you real quick? What do you think of that conference? Like, what do you think of that 12-team Big 12 in the future? When Texas know you are gone someday, I look at it and say, you know, it's a conference that maybe anybody could win.
Yeah.
Like I over the next 5-10 years, you could see a lot of different schools, you know, rising up and playing for conference championships and winning, you know, winning Big 12 titles. What do you think of that conference and the composition?
I think it could be a really, really fun conference. I mean, when you look at these schools that they're adding, they've all had good years in recent years. They've all beaten big teams. BYU beat Oklahoma not all that long ago. Well, God, it has been a while. 2009. Time is flying by for me. I'm remembering, though, but in fairly recent history, BYU has beaten Oklahoma.
Yep.
Houston has beaten Oklahoma in recent years, in 2016.
Did Bradford get hurt in that
yes.
game? BYU?
Yeah, that was Landry. That was the beginning of the Landry Jones era.
That's right.
But yeah, I think it's a really exciting league, and I agree. I think anybody could win. I could absolutely see Cincinnati winning this Big 12. I could see BYU winning this Big 12. Why couldn't Houston crop up and win the Big 12? I think it could be really exciting. The one thing I think that I wonder about is, will recruiting, is there any school now in the Big 12 that can haul in a top 10 recruiting class? That's, and I don't think I think the answer is probably no to that.
Yeah.
So how will that affect things?
It's the Stars Don't Matter League, you know, going forward.
And that's going to be their mantra. That can be the new one true champion. Stars don't matter.
That's right. That's right. Just embrace it.
Yeah, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing that schedule and seeing how that all plays out here in a few years. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well, guys, let's briefly go through last week's games. It is Thursday. We don't want to harp on it too much. And then here in a few minutes, we're going to get to Max had a chance to talk to The Athletic, Scott Docterman, Iowa beat writer, to preview the Cy-Hawk game. which should be awesome. That is a top 10 matchup in the Cy-Hawk game. It's really, really cool.
Wild.
Really cool. Really exciting for Iowa State. Really exciting opportunity for Iowa State. But let's start with the game that I was at last weekend, guys. Oklahoma was a 31.
What's up? What's up with Oklahoma,
man? Was a 31-point favorite and beat Tulane 40-35. And also keep in mind, this is a Tulane team that has been displaced from their home, that is practicing in Birmingham, that had the game shifted from a home to an away game at the very last minute, and they damn near beat the Sooners and came really, really close. If you watch that game, they were covering an onside kick there at the end, and I was thinking, oh, boy, this national championship run is over.
Oh, I mean, even Pratt driving or diving on the fourth down, he came really close, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Delarian Turner-Yell makes a perhaps season-saving tackle there on that game. And I'm curious, and I can get into what I thought about it and everything, but I'm curious what you guys thought watching it. Max, I'll start with you. What did you think watching the Sooners almost?
Yeah, I mean, it's all of these games are just sort of like an exercise in, okay, how much are you supposed to overreact to it? Is it just one little game? And not reflective of OU maybe playing close games all year long or anything like that. I wouldn't say it was the cleanest performance from Spencer Rattler. I know that this just comes with it now with the spotlight he has on him this year, that the expectation is going to be excellence and Heisman level play. And I don't know that, you know, you really saw that throughout the game, but I think just the odd thing is just OU kind of letting off the gas there in the second half and sort of letting Tulane come back in that game. And it sounded like Lincoln Riley kind of learned a lesson there in terms of just the way that he has to approach this team and not, you know, letting them assume that they're just so much more talented than everybody that they can kind of coast through the last few quarters. Do you feel like that? I mean, why do you think it turned out like that?
Well, if this was just a one-off game, if this was the first time this had happened in the Lincoln Riley era, then I think it'd be easy to just sort of write it off. But the problem is this happens a lot. This is last year they were beating Kansas State 35-14 in the third quarter and lost. They were beating Iowa State 24-7 in 2017 and lost. They were beating Iowa State 35-14 at halftime in 2019 and won 42-41 on a very bad no call on a 2-point conversion attempt by Iowa State. So this is a problem that they have, and I think Lincoln Riley needs to figure it out, because this is their best shot at playoff success that they've had in a long time. And these sorts of things can blow it. Now, it's possible this was a wake-up call and they'll be fine the rest of the year. But again, if it hadn't been a problem before, then I would have a lot easier time just writing it off. But this week they're playing Western Carolina. That's not going to be a problem. I don't think Nebraska is going to be a problem, but when they get into Big 12 play,
I can assure you they won't be. Yeah.
When they get into Big 12 play, Kansas State, West Virginia, Kansas State, Texas, first three games, you know, that could be pretty dangerous. Sam wanted to ask you about Texas. The Longhorns have a really nice debut for the Steve Sarkisian era. You were there in the house. What was your impressions of the Longhorns?
I was surprised how competent they looked, impressed by how smooth and just efficient they operated. It was impressive, because I think we've become accustomed at Texas to that opening game being a debacle or something going terribly wrong for Texas. And I thought overall Steve Sarkisian's play calling was excellent. I thought the way he used Bijan Robinson in the passing game, obviously as a rusher, he fed him the ball like he promised he would. That the defense played pretty well. I thought they were solid. DeMarvin Overshown at weak side linebacker looks like a potential star to me. And I think the only question I have is, you know, maybe a little bit better protection. You know, they could see a little, you know, they let Hudson Card get hit a few times, but you want to see that get shored up. And I think from a special team standpoint, they got a punt return touchdown taken off the board on some blocks. But overall, you beat a ranked team by 20 points. The game was not particularly close. It wasn't really ever in doubt. I think early on, certainly Louisiana was in it. But as the game went on, it never felt like Texas was in danger of losing that game. And it clearly felt like they were the better team. And they played like the team that had better talent. So I thought overall, impressed, smooth. I wouldn't go punch the playoff ticket for this team or Big 12 championship ticket for this team just yet. But I think it was a promising start and encouraging if you're a Texas fan to start the Steve Sarkisian era this way.
Yeah, Absolutely. Absolutely. Real quick, guys, we want to get to the interview with Scott Docterman, but the rest of the Big 12, it really wasn't a great week for a lot of the Big 12. Iowa State has another real scare in week one. Oklahoma State didn't just blow away Missouri State. Max, as you look around the rest of the Big 12, what were your impressions?
I would say stock up on Texas Tech. I thought that was a nice performance from them.
Should have said Houston. That. Yeah.
I thought that, you know, what you saw from Easy and from Taj Brooks and Tyler Shuck, and certainly just the way that they took over that game in the second half with the, I think they finished on a 31-0 scoring run. I thought that was impressive. I noticed this morning ESPN FPI has them as an 8-4 team now. So how about that? Texas Tech is back. And I thought it was a good day from Kansas State, you know, I against Stanford. I think that, you know, defensively really didn't let Stanford move the ball much. I know they're having QB issues, but, great to see Skylar Thompson back doing his thing. Kansas State only played 45 snaps on offense. I think they'd probably take that every week in the Big 12. They love playing that way. And, I thought, you know, controlled that game pretty well. The other ones, you're sort of like, how much do you read into the concerns here? Obviously, Oklahoma State without Spencer Sanders wasn't great. I think West Virginia, you've got some real concerns there about, you know, there's some little bit of fine tuning there, but clearly that fan base is turning on Jarrett Diggy, and you wonder this week against an FCS opponent, do you get a little bit of a look at Garrett Green, and does that kind of open things up there a little bit? I know they want to stand by him, but. Certainly the turnovers in that game against Maryland were just killer for them. And then, guys, I really enjoyed the time we spent together, not together in the same place, but the time we spent together on Twitter, you know, watching Kansas football.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, Jason, what is our bean situation?
That was a great tweet, Max. That was
shout out to Jason Bean getting it done in the clutch.
He did. He got it done in the clutch.
The Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas,
the Lance Leipold era. One True Pod guest, Lance Leipold, we should say.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. Starts off with a 17-14 victory. It was pretty dicey there for a while, though, guys. It was pretty dicey. But the Jayhawks do get it done. It's going to be a little tougher for them this week at Coastal Carolina, but still, congratulations. Look, after all they've been through this offseason, good for them getting a win, even if it was that hard. That's my take on that game.
The broadcast really drove it home there. Like, these guys have had a month of practice together,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
You know, just August.
Yeah.
So, I think they're going to, as I've said before, I think they're going to look a lot better. Even if they're not winning games, I think they're going to look better in November than they do now. But, you know, good on them for gritting it out in their opener and inspiring a little hope.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned, when I said the Big 12 had a bad week, I should have mentioned Kansas State and Texas Tech. Apologies to those fans, because everybody knows how I feel about Deuce Vaughn.
No, but the top 25 teams were definitely, yeah. Other than Texas, the top 25, sort of caliber teams ran into a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's get into next week. We want to start with this interview with Scott Docterman. Max had a chance to catch up with our Iowa beat writer, Scott Docterman, to break down the Cy-Hawk game. So we'll go to that and we'll come back on the other side and make our picks and preview next week.
This is a series that has been, you know, it's a big day here in Iowa every year when they play. They both could be bad or one mediocre and one bad. It doesn't matter. Now they're both in the top 10 and they've never been ranked before when they played one another. So, you know, from the Iowa State angle, what's kind of been your takeaway of maybe Matt Campbell's trajectory to this point in his career? And how have you viewed it? And where do you think they kind of sit as a program now that he's 5 years in?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most impressive, you know, building jobs that anyone's done here probably in the last 5-10 years of college football. And not to say, you know, it wasn't like Kansas rock bottom level bad when he took over, obviously. But, you know, I think that just the steps they've taken every year as a coaching staff, you know, especially within the context of the Big 12 and you know, going from that sort of initial expectation of, you know, hoping to get to a bowl game to now building into, you know, a program that, you know, you're not more talented than the 2, 3, 4 best teams in the Big 12, but you do believe you can beat any of them. And, you know, when you play right, when you know, that you've got the pieces now, you know, certainly for Iowa State, their good players are now all Big 12 good. You know, that's a big, hard thing to achieve in building up your program, and hard to do it fast, where, you know, the Brock Purdy's and Breece Hall's and Mike Rose's, they aren't just, you know, feel good stories of guys that play higher than their ranking. They're like, you know, defensive player of the year, offensive player of the year in your conference. And so even with how, you know, Oklahoma's rolling and Texas is always loaded, incredibly impressive. And, but, you know, certainly as we all know, this is the trophy that's missing on the mantle there. You know, this is, other than winning a Big 12 title, this is the one that, you know, everyone in that building, absolutely, you know, thinks about this all the time and, you know, throughout the year, and they want this one. And I'm sure that they roll into this one, even with, you know, not the most exciting opener, that they played against Northern Iowa. I think there's, I'm sure, a lot of confidence that, you know, when they play their best football, when they don't make mistakes and, you know, when they're healthy and all that, that they have a chance to play with anybody on their schedule. And so this is, you know, it's absolutely fascinating that they're both in the top 10 here.
I think this game features two of the best defensive coordinators in the country and certainly two of the most underrated ones. And I really like the Heacock story. And I know you wrote about them and at one point, what, maybe about 2 years ago when him and Brent Venables, I mean, what kind of happened there?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think that, you know, what Iowa State has done on defense was really, I mean, it really surprised everybody in the Big 12, you know, to switch to the odd front and get really proficient at that, you know, dropping eight and making, you know, quarterbacks a little bit more confused. And you know, certainly the way that, like, Iowa State just figured out a really, really smart way to get their best players on the field on defense and to simplify the game down for them and have fewer missed assignments. And, you know, it's been something that, you know, you keep iterating on it, obviously, over these last few years, but it's given them a big advantage when you play against Big 12 teams. You saw Baylor take it and steal it and then go win the Big 12 title the next year, or, you know, play for a Big 12 title the next year with it. And certainly it's something that Clemson adopted under Venables, you know, when they were, I think, 2 years ago, doing that a little bit more. And really having some success with it when they played, let's see, which game was that? Oh, when they beat Ohio State in the semifinal to go play LSU in the championship, mm-hmm. That year, they kind of adopted more of that with their personnel. And it'll be fun to see how it fits into this game. Certainly, I think that staff has done a really brilliant job of just taking what you got and figuring out how to play good defense and really sound smart defense with it. And then you've got, you know, the guys like Mike Rose and Greg Eisworth who've been there a long time and just a high level of experience at a bunch of spots in that lineup. But I'm with you. I'm certainly interested to see. That was a big highlight reel heavy kind of debut from Iowa's defense in this first game against Indiana. And, you know, certainly that tug of war in the game is going to be massive, I imagine, just which defense makes fewer mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's with Iowa State, it's really fascinating because I imagine they'll probably slide more from a 3-3-5 to a 4-2 just because I think they might have to have at least somebody on the line of scrimmage because of Iowa's zone blocking scheme. They're going to need to be physical to attack because Iowa is very, you know, it's an old school.
And they have some versatility in that. Haycock is a guy that still, you know, his whole experience is in four-man fronts. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure there's a little bit of versatility there, but it's a fair point.
And I remember talking to Matt about that a couple of years ago and he said, look, Haycock was a guy, four down lineman, quarters coverage. That's what he wanted to do. But about midway through that first year, it was like, we can't win in this league with that defense. And then that's when collectively, and then Haycock really earned his money. I mean, to switch it around and they've turned into, you know, really a terrific defense. And for a number of years, they've had guys come and go. Jaquan Bailey was really good. And some of their other corners and stuff. And yet here they are. And Mike Rose, of course, has been there, it feels like forever. But, you know, and then conversely with Iowa was a 4-3 defense forever until 2018. And they got beat one too many times when they tried to throw their third linebacker on a slot. And it was against Wisconsin. And then inside of a final minute, couldn't cover. You know, surprisingly enough, it's Nick Neiman who ran about a 4-4. He's with the Chargers now. And yet, you know, he's like, okay, we got to do something different. And they went to a 4-2-5. And it's better now than it's been in 10 plus years. And the other day proved it. I mean, their secondary, everybody in the secondary returned. They've got some good edge players. Their linebackers are pretty underrated. I think they're really good. They've got some holes kind of up front in the interior, but they didn't look out of place the other day. But I think Brock Purdy can kind of change the game a little bit against Iowa because Iowa is risk averse a little bit in the secondary in that they do not want to give up any big plays. And so that's what made a couple of years ago so strange because that's really about all they did. But in this game, it might be 7 yards at a time per pass, but Brock Purdy's good enough to do it. On the flip side, I don't know about Spencer Petras at Iowa. I've seen him. He's won games, but it's not really him going out there and tipping the field and making the plays. And his predecessors have done this in this series, but he hasn't. And he's going to have to prove it now or he'll have to wear that
label. And Iowa State has to find a way to put Iowa in that position where Spencer Petras has to prove that, right? Like if you're not getting gashed in the run game by Goodson and their backs, if they are able to kind of have a little bit of control on defense, then I'm sure that's the plan at Iowa State is make the QB beat you because we don't know how good he is. Mm-hmm. And we know how good Purdy can be. Can he play that kind of performance in this game? Not to say he's a very inconsistent guy, but, you know, this is the game you put it all together.
Yeah, right. And you know, at least locally within the state of Iowa, this is a legacy-defining game. How you perform in this, people, you know, it's not unlike what you see in Auburn, Alabama. Now, it's not to the scope nationally, but in here in Iowa, you remember these games, what happened when, you know, Seneca Wallace's run or in basketball, the Fester Rhodes' 54-point performance and, you know, all these other events. So if Brock Purdy takes him down the length of the field in the final few minutes and they win that game, he'll be remembered forever by Cyclone fans as that guy. Or if Spencer Petras throws an interception.
You know, and in 2021, Scott, if you go do that, you can even become, you know, even richer because of that.
That's right.
Go sell the T-shirts of the, you know, the heroic drive and all that. And, you know, I think it makes you a legend, but it can also make you a little money these days now, too. You know,
can you if we had NIL 2 years ago, I guarantee there would have been T-shirts on the east side of the state that showed the two Cyclones running into each other on that punt. I guarantee.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you going to send the money back to the two players that are depicted in their likeness? Hopefully so.
I hope so.
That would be harsh.
Things like that do have a way of happening, though, regardless. So, I could see that. So, I mean, how do you see this game playing out? I mean, we've kind of broken it down in a lot of different ways. But, I mean, is there something that really stands out for you?
I think Iowa State will win this, but I'm sure you probably feel the opposite, but I don't know if either of us feel very strongly about that going into this game. I don't know how you feel, but I think it's hard. It's easy to be a little bit concerned by week one and the disparity in what you saw. You talk to some Iowa State folks who say, well, in August, just because of the approach we take with camp, we really don't really scrimmage that much in August. So sometimes that opener can be a little bit messier. But can you flip the switch and go out and play your very best football? And, you could watch that game and say maybe they're saving some good stuff for the Hawkeyes. I'm sure that's possible. Maybe that is the case. But that gives me some pause, obviously. Week one did. But I think that how important this game is to Iowa State, how important it is just as a step for the program. And maybe that can make it too big in your heads and you don't play your best on Saturday when it's time to kick off. But I think that two really, really good teams, I won't be surprised by either outcome. And that stadium's going to be rocking. I think Iowa State finds a way to get it done in truly we'd be shocked if it's a blowout, right? Like, I think it's a truly a four quarter, last 5 minutes kind of fight. I'll take the Cyclones. Do you see Iowa winning that kind of a game?
Oh, I think they can. I'm probably not predicting it though. And
oh, really?
And okay. I'm gonna pick Iowa State by three somehow.
Yeah, that's kind of how we see it. Yeah,
it would not shock me in the least if this is an overtime game. Iowa kicks a field goal. Iowa State scores a touchdown, type of thing. And I've seen it happen before. So both sides. I think. Right. As you mentioned, Iowa State traditionally plays poorly in its opener. It's done that against Northern Iowa 2 years ago, double overtime.
Louisiana last year.
Louisiana. Yeah. I was at that game, and they looked horrendous in that game.
Yeah.
And then they came back and had a really nice year. They've done that throughout. Heck, even going back, this is a ways, when Gene Chizik was the head coach, they started out in 2007 0-2, and they got beat by Kent State and Northern Iowa. By like one was like 9, the other was like 11 points. Iowa was 2-0, had beaten Syracuse 35-0 at home at night at Kinnick. They're going over to Jack Trice. I think it was a 17-point favorite as Iowa was. Ended up 15-13 Iowa State. They kicked 5 field goals to win that game. So when I saw that, I'm like, just throw it all out. You never really know what's going to happen. And
That's what happens when you go against a national championship head coach like Gene Chizik.
We all knew it at the time too.
Of course. Yeah, of
we
course.
Figured he'd win it for the Cyclones, right? No, it. But that's kind of what I don't know is in this game, things happen, things are weird, things change. There have been times where 2-4 years ago up there where Iowa took like a 14-point lead, and then Iowa State led by 10 in the fourth quarter, and Iowa came back and went into overtime. I mean, I expect swings. I expect a lot of different things. Really what it boils down to me and why I'm picking Iowa State to win this is quarterback. Brock Purdy, even in losses, like Baylor a few years ago, they're down like 20-0, and then they lose. He takes them on 3 scoring drives, and then lose 23-21. And then wins. He has that experience. He's done it over and over and over again. The competitiveness, at some point when you lose these rivalry games, you've got to reach it. And Matt Campbell's shown to me that he's capable of doing it. If he can do it to Oklahoma, which this program's never done, he can do it to Iowa. That said, Iowa's going in there with the same attitude. Frankly, they want to kick their ass. That's the kind of the attitude that they're taking.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
I think in West Des Moines Dowling alone, there are 8 kids, 4 on each side. I mean, so Central Iowa is ablaze right now. So I think all those factors lean into that. But as you said, I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa just shuts them down, maybe has a pick 6 of their own, and all of a sudden it's like, You know, you got them in a headlock for the four quarters, and Iowa wins 20-7 or something like that either. But I would predict it a different way. I would pick Iowa State somewhere in the neighborhood of 23-20 is probably something that I would go with.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, fellas, there you go. Big thank you to Scott Docterman for joining the pod. You can hear the rest of that conversation, a more extended conversation, on the Big Football Show on the Athletics Big Ten podcast. But guys, let's start where we kind of wrapped up there. How do you see CyHawk going?
Well, Iowa State has struggled in that game in recent years, and Iowa is a really good team. Iowa State's coming off that rough start. I'm going to take Iowa because I love Iowa State. Everybody knows how I feel about the Cyclones, and I still think they're a really great team, but recent history suggests that Iowa kind of has their number, and until Iowa State beats them, I think I'm just going to pick Iowa.
I'm going to go the other way. I was very vocal and outspoken at the preseason, the start of this year, that I was all in on Iowa State. I think they're going to go ahead and win the conference. And this game does not affect their ability to do that, regardless of result. However, I do believe last week's wake-up call will do just that. I think you'll see a lot better performance from this team this weekend, and I think Iowa State will go ahead and pull it out. I think I'm taking the Clones.
There's not going to be any vacancy on the bandwagon Saturday night if they pull this off. So you got to kind of make your decision on if you're in or out. You know, before kickoff here.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm in. I've been in. I'm staying on. I'm not jumping off right now. I am staying on the Cyclones bandwagon. Wait, so
a lot of anti-Cyclone rhetoric here from Jason.
Why is that? Does this mean I'm out? I'm out of the off the Cyclone train just because I'm not picking him to win this game?
You are not allowed to take any pleasure in Iowa State for the rest of the season.
Not even my man Brees. I can't even talk him up anymore. Is that the rule? Them's the rules, right?
don't come back on the bandwagon when they beat Oklahoma, Jason. That's all I'm going to say.
Rules, okay, don't ask me. I don't make the rules.
Okay. Well, I'm not changing because
no, it's cool.
I'm not changing because that would be peer pressure, and I don't succumb to peer pressure.
No. Well. All right. Let's start the picks here. Okay. And no one should listen to a word I say from this point forward because I'm off to a 1-5
Wait. Should we update the standings right quick? We haven't.
Yeah, let's go to the standings.
I was 5-1, and I have to thank Sam because Sam talked me into taking Texas State against the spread against Baylor. If you hadn't done that, Sam, we would be tied at 4-2, which is where you are, and then Max is bringing up the rear at 1-5. So that's where we're at. Now you can proceed.
So you're telling me I'm giving too much game away for free. I need to hold some of that back. Duly noted.
Need to do Sam Khan's premium picks here. All right, so I will try to say as little as possible during this pick segment for obvious reasons. I should be sitting in the corner here. I think I like Iowa plus 4.5, but I think Iowa State wins.
Okay. So like by a field goal?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good.
So where do you against the spread, Sam, you're taking Iowa State 4.5?
You know what? I'll go with you. I'll take Iowa State to win outright, but I'll take Iowa to cover. I think this is definitely going to be a field goal game coming down to the end type of result.
All right. Well, I'm taking the Hawkeyes both against the spread and straight up. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Wow.
I've already angered our Iowa State listeners enough. I might as well just go for it.
Hey, I mean, the man's 5-1. I mean, we all should follow his lead.
Absolutely. You should. All right. So actually, you should. You should just pick all the same games I do for the whole rest of the year. That's what you guys should do. And then I'll win. So.
No way. That's boring.
Hey, spoiler alert. I'm just picking favorites the rest of the day here. I'm just playing it safe. I got some catching up to do. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Kansas at Coastal Carolina. Coastal, a 25-point favorite. And as much as you know, we love Lance Leipold here, I'm probably going to have to go Coastal here against the spread and straight up. Sam?
Man, last week's game is very amusing, very interesting. Does not inspire confidence in me that they can cover the 25.
Yeah.
Because they had a hard time beating a team that, an FCS team that wasn't very good. So I'm going to agree with you. I think Coastal covers the 25 and wins going away.
Matt? I agree. And you know, we know, I'm interested to see certainly how, you know, Kansas's defensive staff, you know, what they come up with for this week. We all know, you know, they played them last year, so they saw it. You know, that last staff, you know, didn't really have the answers in that opener against Grayson McCall and those guys. And we know that option system is just damn hard to defend. So, yeah, I think Coastal will win pretty comfortably here. But, you know, if you keep it to like 17 or 20, like I would consider that a little bit of a moral victory for Kansas.
And to be clear, guys, there are only five games with a line this week. There are other games. We'll just touch on those and mention them at the end. But there are only five games with a line this week. We got five Big 12 teams playing FCS schools. Let's go next to Tulsa at Oklahoma State. Now, Tulsa is coming off a pretty rough defeat, but Oklahoma State didn't look all that impressive either. The Cowboys are a 12.5-point favorite. Max, I'll throw it to you first.
Yeah, I think they'll cover that. You know, certainly, you know, you want to have a better sense of you know, where Spencer Sanders is at for this game after he missed the last one due to COVID protocols. But that wasn't the only thing that was wrong with Oklahoma State, you know, last week. I mean, they need to run the ball a lot better against Tulsa. And, you know, I think they're missing some key guys on defense. So I think this is a bounce back week for Oklahoma State. They got their scare. You know, Missouri State isn't great, but they've got some FBS bounce back players. Their quarterback was played at Utah and Utah State. Like they had some decent players and gave them a scare, you know, down, you know, had some chances there down late in the fourth. So I think Oklahoma State probably responds and shows that they're a much better team this week. I'd be surprised if this one, as close as the Tulsa game was last year, you know, even if it's Illingworth, I'd be surprised if this game was super, super close.
Sam?
Yeah, I agree with Max. The Tulsa game last year gave me pause, but at the same time, Tulsa just lost to UC Davis.
Yes.
And that is problematic. So,
and Zaven Collins ain't walking through that door.
That's right. That's right. And so given that, I think it sounds like Gundy said earlier this week that Spencer was going to be back at practice, you know, late in the week. So that would track that he would play. But even if it's Illingworth, I think they're in fine shape. They got to be better than 1.9 yards per carry, that's for sure. But I think they win going away. I think Oklahoma State covers. So I got the Pokes.
I really, if UC Davis hadn't beat Tulsa last week, I would have been really tempted to take Tulsa against the spread. But after that,
freaking Dan Hawkins, man.
After that, I don't think I can, in good conscience, take the Golden Hurricane. Apologies to my man Eddie Radosovich, but I can't take Tulsa. I will go Oklahoma State against the spread. I agree. I think it could be a good bounce back game for them. So, but again, that game was close last year, so we'll see. Next up, we got Cal at TCU, which is an 11.5-point favorite. I know that we've all talked TCU up a little bit, so I'll just go ahead and say I think TCU covers. Sam, we'll go to Sam next.
Yeah, I'll take TCU to cover, and they had a very nice, easy tune-up game against Duquesne last week. They didn't even play an entire second half. They actually shortened the second half to 12-minute quarters because the Duquesne coach was concerned about depth, and they lost a few guys. So they got a real easy, like, preseason game to prep for this one. This one's at home, the first of four straight at home for TCU. Max Duggan looked smooth last week. This team is rolling, so I think TCU covers the 11.5. Go Frogs.
Yeah, the, you know, Cal Cal's coming off a loss here to Nevada, and we know Carson Strong's a potential, you know, high draft pick at quarterback there, but just, you know, not a very inspiring, you know, performance offensively from Cal. It is an interesting matchup for them, but I think TCU is, I think you're right, Sam. I think that sort of scrimmage style opener was good for them to just sort of get rolling, build some confidence. And, you know, I think this is looking like a team, you know, when healthy at the key spots. Like, I think it looked like a team that can score a lot of points, and I think they probably will this week. So I like TCU to cover.
And finally, the old Southwest Conference rivalry renewed.
What are you taking on that one?
Me? I said TCU. I said it up front.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. All right.
My bad. It's okay. I was very brief, but I said TCU. Now we'll move on to the, you know, other than Iowa-Iowa State, another Big 12 sort of game of the week, a future SEC matchup, a former Southwest Conference matchup, Texas at Arkansas. We'll start with the Texpert, Sam, and you'll be there, I believe.
Sam,
correct?
You'll be at this game, right? Yeah.
I will be in Fayetteville for this one.
Let me know if you need restaurant recommendations.
I will. I probably do.
I'm not trying to derail this podcast for 5-10 minutes here, Jason, but I've never been to Fayetteville, so I look forward to Sam's review next week.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's an underrated SEC trip. It's an underrated college football trip. I have been a few times to Fayetteville. It's very pretty. Northwest Arkansas is very scenic, and the atmosphere for the game is good. The atmosphere in town after a game is good. Overall, I have enjoyed my trips to Fayetteville, so I've been looking forward to this one. Going back, and I am planning to eat well. It's been a few years since I've been, so Jason, I may need an updated list of spots to hit before the game. But I am taking Texas to cover. They're laying 7. I've got the Horns to cover. I think Arkansas is good enough to cover, but I am just a little troubled by what I saw last week with Arkansas offensively. KJ Jefferson looked a little disjointed against that Rice defense, and Rice got a very good defense, but I was a little discouraged by that. They were tied in the fourth quarter going into the final stanza against Rice. There was a game that was probably a lot harder than it should have been for Arkansas. So given that, I think and the way how sharp Texas looked, I think Sark has played this team before. You know, he was at Alabama, obviously, and obviously Barry Odom and that Arkansas defense knows him obviously as well. But this is different personnel; it's not Alabama personnel. So I think it's going to provide for an interesting matchup. But I think Texas covers. I've taken the Horns.
I think this one could be pretty spicy. I mean, I know I haven't forgotten how much Kendall Briles hates Texas. I'm sure they're going to be bringing it. They're going to have some good tricks up their sleeve for this defense. And certainly, I think we know Barry Odom. You know, yeah, they didn't shut down Sark's Bama offense last year. Nobody did. But I mean, interested to see what he comes up with to. You know, when you are facing a really young quarterback who's only had one start and not a lot of experience here, I think it could be a potentially kind of close game. But I like Texas to cover the 7. Not so freaked out about Arkansas's game against Rice necessarily, but I like, as you said, Sam, like I think you watch Texas right now, you can tell it's a different coaching staff, and it's just a different. It seems to be sort of a different. You know, sort of mentality with this team. And that was encouraging to see when they play clean as they did on Saturday, then you see the athletes they've got. You can see that they can play really well. You know, might be a little bit sloppier this time. We'll see how they can kind of sustain that week to week. But I like Texas in this game. And I think Texas is in pretty good shape here to get on a little bit of a run before they have to play you know, TCU and Oklahoma.
Max, I'm curious, when you mentioned Kendall Briles, is the last time Kendall Briles faced Texas that game where they had the fight? Remember when they had the fight near the sideline in the second half? Is that the last time that Kendall Briles has faced Texas?
I think, well, hold on. Was that Grobes?
No.
He was still there with Grobe.
No. Oh, no. Okay, yeah, you're right. You know, because I think it wasn't with Grobe. I think it was with Art. Okay. So. I think so. It may have been 15. Okay.
Baylor, Texas played some weird ones for sure towards the end of that tenure there at Baylor. So, I think it's I think it could be I think it could be a pretty fun game here. But I think Texas will take care of business.
Let me ask you
Jason,
guys. Let me ask you guys a question. Do you think that you should have to stick to what you said in the preseason in week 2? Like, should we have to stick to predictions? Because I kind of feel like I should. Stick to predictions. And the prediction I made in the preseason was that Texas would lose one of their first two games. And I picked them to beat Louisiana. So
do it.
I think I'm taking the Hogs.
Call the Hogs.
I think I'm going to take the Hogs. I just think that stadium is going to be so intense. I think it's going to be a crazy environment. They've been looking forward to this game for a long time. I think Arkansas's talent is better than what they showed last week against Rice. I'm not sold on KJ Jefferson yet, but I don't know. I just have a feeling Arkansas is going to win this game, and I can't quite put my finger on it. But I'm going to take Arkansas to cover and win. And in doing so, I'm going to give you guys a chance to catch up with me because we picked everything else the same.
Jason's gonna duck out of Norman as quickly as he can and go drive over to Fayetteville real quick and call the Hogs late on Dixon Street.
Yeah,
I can feel it.
That's one.
He's gonna pull the Baker Mayfield and head out to Fayetteville for a nice Saturday night here. You know?
See, I was gonna bring that up and say, Sam, it's best to avoid Dixon late on a Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
I know. I'm a little bit more grown. I have kids now, so I don't have the
those bricks will get you, man.
That's right,
you
know? Man. I cannot risk that at this point. So
I still can't believe he got up from that hit. Really, like
yeah.
I my God, that was so intense.
What an athlete!
I love it. Toughness, baby. That's physical toughness.
Well, guys, that was a lot of fun, as always, with you guys.
You want to go through these last five real
quick? Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, my gosh.
So we got West Virginia versus Long Island. We got Oklahoma, Western Carolina.
On pay-per-view.
We got on pay-per-view.
I know.
Gotta love it. We got Baylor versus Texas Southern. You got K-State versus Southern Illinois. And you've got Texas Tech against SFA. So, Texpert, Which team's in a little more danger here? Is it TSU or SFA that could put up a better fight?
Definitely SFA. Colby Carthel, they've got a really good squad over there in Nacogdoches. I don't expect it to be super close, but I wouldn't be shocked just because that's a good team. TSU, I love.
We saw the HBU game last year, too.
That's right. That's right. All
these teams get up for that.
Bailey Zappe threw for about 8,000 yards against Texas Tech last year. So and I'm sure the Jones will be rocking, but TSU and Baylor, that one's not going to be close. TSU, unfortunately, under Clarence McKinney, who we know and love, has not done well. Things have not gone well for Clarence over at TSU. So I expect Baylor to have a much cleaner, dominant game in that one.
They've had some bounce backs, though. They've brought in some FBS players.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they have. So they just got to be able to get some wins. They were close a couple times in the spring, but haven't been able to get through. But, yeah, SFA is the only one of those that really – I look at it and say, huh, I wouldn't be shocked if that was a game at some point in the second half. But Texas Tech, I think
Southern Illinois, slightly interesting too, but I can't see Klieman overlooking an FCS game, you know?
Of course not. That's where he came from. But West Virginia definitely needs this bounce back against Long Island. So that would it will be interesting to see if they can just be clean and efficient early on. But
you know, they got Virginia Tech coming up, and Virginia Tech, certainly one of the more surprising upset wins there in week one against UNC. So, this is a get-right week for West Virginia.
Yeah, but overall, an interesting week in the Big 12. I think it's going to be fun to watch.
I think it's an important bounce-back week for OU, too. Not that I expect them to have any problems with Western Carolina. I think they'll probably win that game very handily and easily, but don't you guys think it's probably important for them to look impressive while doing it after last week?
Yeah, definitely.
Without question. Yeah, you got to get some confidence back. Just go out there and finish. Honestly, that's the most important thing I think for this OU team moving forward is finish. Because we know they can start well. We know they can move the ball. They just got to finish. That's really what it comes down to for this team. This team can do everything else.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to get a little, you know, Caleb Williams teaser too, if we can get some action from him.
Got a little bit of action from him last week. Rushed for a touchdown, and
I like that red zone. Yeah, that was nice.
The new belldozer.
That's
if
right.
You know, you know. Thanks, guys, and thanks to all of you as always for listening. We're here every Thursday in the Andy Staples Show and Friends feed. So if you haven't already, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our stories on The Athletic. If you're not yet a subscriber, you can sign up with our latest promotional offer at theathletic.com/onetruepod. That's theathletic.com/onetruepod. You're going to get comprehensive coverage of this Big 12 season and the future of the conference. So now is a great time to sign up. We'll see you next time.